It's a trap!
Hello and welcome to episode number 156 of Radio TCX, your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy. I'm Tim Dugan, and Carson is unable to join us for this week's episode, so in his stead, we have our usual guest host here, John McDermid. John, thanks for coming on the show to cover for Carson.
Glad to be back, Tim.
Today we figured we'd dive into something interesting, something a little more in-depth, and maybe a little more negative than we tend to get on this show. We're going to talk about increasing game complexity in X-Wing, specifically looking at the Separatist Alliance and the Galactic Republic, two new factions coming out in Wave 3, which should release here, I think, in the very near future. We've already seen a ton of articles on these. We're going to talk about what those factions are bringing to the game in terms of complexity, what complexity is in X-Wing, and whether or not it's going to be a good or bad thing. So I think we've got a lot of stuff to talk about here, so I think we should just get right into it. All right, so John, we're talking about complexity today, though I feel the need, since the last time we had you on was before the First Order and the Resistance released, I thought it'd be good to get a quick thought from you. Have you been playing the First Order? Have you been liking the First Order? I know this is diverging from the topic we're going to talk about today, but...
Yeah, so I've been playing a lot of First Order, actually. I'm having a lot of fun with Quickdraw. She was one of my favorite ships in First Edition. And I've been flying a couple generic silencers. They're surprisingly really good with Fanatical. I'm finding that Fanatical is probably one of my favorite cards in the game right now.
And you were kind of not big on the generic silencers when we last talked about them, right?
Yeah, I didn't think I'd fly generic anything, really. I'm a fan of kind of ace play named pilots, but I'm really digging that quick draw into First Order test pilots.
Right. And do you feel, now I think this is going to be a great transition for me, do you feel like that list brings a lot of complexity to you running those ships?
As a fan of ace play, I feel like kind of just the theme of the list is go fast and get around your opponent. I think the cards themselves are not complex, but there are definitely some games where I have to make some really key decisions that make it feel a little bit more complex than, you know, just kind of flying straight at your opponent and shooting and hoping for the best. So it's a good mix. I think it kind of depends on the game.
Right. And I think that that's a good way to bring up complexity, too, because I think this is kind of an abstract concept. And I don't think a lot of people, even people who enjoy games like X-Wing at a pretty high level, necessarily think about this from like a design standpoint. But I want to jump into this podcast talking a little bit about what we mean when we're talking about complexity in X-Wing, because I guess our premise here today is that looking at the upcoming release of the two new factions, the Separatist Alliance and the Galactic Republic, we're seeing a lot of what I would call increased complexity, and it has me a little wary of things to come. Not that there's anything that jumps out and screams at me, though there's a couple cards that get pretty close to just being obscenely long. I wanted to talk a little bit about how this might negatively impact the game, positively impact the game, but before we dive into that, I think we should really define what we mean when we're talking about complexity in a game.
So one of the first things that comes to mind for me when I think about complexity in X-Wing is the number of things that a player has to keep track of, particularly with like maybe their list specifically. And this kind of just gets built into skill of the game and how good you are and how well you know your list. But that can get out of hand pretty quick as well.
Well, and one of the nice things, because I think that's a good point, because I think one of the nice things about X-Wing is that for the most part, all our cards are up on the table. Obviously, we've got that randomized damage deck, but it's not like a trading card game where you've got all your opponent's deck. You probably don't necessarily have a deck list. You might have a deck list, but all the information is available on the table for you to reference, which is really nice for the most part. But this does compile pretty quickly. So if you're playing a game of X-Wing where you're just running, you know, two small lists of just a handful of simple ships, no upgrade cards, that's not going to be a very complex game because you only have to track so much information. You won't have upgrade cards. You might not even have ship abilities. But the more components you add to the game, like the more upgrade cards you can fit into a list, the more text there is on those upgrade cards and the number of things on those upgrade cards, like different triggers or different costs, that all is going to compound onto a player playing the game and make the complexity of the game go up. So I think a huge part of it is, like you're saying, the amount of stuff you have to track. So a complex game would be one where you're tracking, you know, tens to hundreds of pieces of information, whereas a simple game would be one where you just have to track a few things.
And as a competitive player, one of the biggest things that I want to do when I go into a game is not only do I need to understand the complexity of my list, but I don't want to spend 20 minutes going over how complex my opponent's list either. You know, I need to look at that list before the game starts and kind of have a general idea of what it's going to do on the table.
Well, yeah, because that's a huge unknown there, because when you go to a tournament, especially if you're playing in like the extended format, which basically has all that conversion kit content from first edition, you're going to go into that tournament. They could be flying any number of dozens of pilots, any number of, you know, 100 or so upgrade cards. So there's a lot of stuff you could be expecting, and it's really hard for you to know everything that your opponent might possibly bring. Now, obviously, it plays into the factor here that there's only a set number of cards that are good enough, maybe, for competitive play. But the more releases we see over time, we're going to see more cards get introduced, more rules get introduced, which is the point here. Like, you have to be familiar enough with the rules, either through experience or just familiarizing yourself with new releases, that that also is going to put an increased burden on a player. So the game will get increasingly complex on top of that. So really, I think those two factors are a good place to start. And I think this is true of most any game you play. There are going to be, every game has some level of complexity, whether it's really low, really high, or somewhere in the middle. So these are kind of two factors to keep in mind. I think the big one, though, is the amount of information you have to keep track of while you're playing. But that raises a really interesting question, because the question is complexity a good thing or a bad thing? Is more of it make a game better or worse? And that's a trickier question, I think.
So if a game lacks complexity, there's a good chance it's probably not fun, or in my case, I like my games to be stimulating. I like to actually think about what's going on in the game, the decisions I need to make. So if a game is not stimulating me, then it's probably not that enjoyable.
Yeah, and this is a factor too, because I actually really enjoy listening to Mark Rosewater, who is basically the head designer for Magic the Gathering. And I'm not actually even a big Magic player. I think I went to one event and played Standard one time. But I like the game of Magic just at its, you know, a casual level, and I really enjoy the design of it. And he actually has a podcast called Drive to Work where he talks about a lot of these elements. And one thing he brings up too is there's like, when you design a game, you're trying to get your player to get something out of it. Now, most of the time we might call that fun, but there's a lot of different factors here of like, you could just like go for the competitive element. You might try for the like puzzle solving element. It doesn't necessarily have to be fun in like a simplistic sense. I think X-Wing is a good mix where it can be both that intellectually stimulating and just enjoyable and entertaining to play, with this variance and the random chance where things can turn around really suddenly from bold moves. But there's a degree to which we see games when you and I are both board gamers. We play games and we enjoy them for different reasons, and different games clearly have different levels of complexity. So the amount of complexity, I don't think necessarily correlates to how good or bad the game is. You know, different games, like I'm really enjoying Sushi Go, that at its basic level has some complexity, but not too much. It's enough to track for new players so they can have a good time, but they won't get completely destroyed by someone who already played the game.
Sure.
So you have to look at it as the factor of like, okay, is the game as complex as it should be to accomplish its goal? And I would say if you're looking at X-Wing, if the goal is to, at a competitive level, be intellectually stimulating while still have those, you know, dramatic turnaround moments or the ability to take bold risks, you want to make sure the level of complexity is right for that. And if a game has too little, it can be really unfun. Like, we're talking like tic-tac-toe level of, that game is on the lowest tier possible, probably, of complexity. And it's, I think, painfully unfun, I would hope. Probably most people listening to this. But on the other side, if you make a game too complex, like I've seen a lot of, you know, sophisticated miniatures games and really sophisticated board games, which like they put in all these really well thought out elements, and at the end of the day, there's just too much going on. I'm not enjoying the experience or feeling like this is a worthwhile use of my time.
Right. And I don't want to play a game and get a splitting migraine, but I also don't want to play a game and feel like I'm eating glue at the same time.
Neither of those I would recommend either. One thing, though, with regards to whether complexity is good or bad, is I think for a game like X-Wing, or for any ongoing competitive game, whether that's miniatures where we see new releases or trading card games, the game does have to grow over time. Usually that means new releases, and inherently whenever you release new cards or new content for a game, that means the complexity is going to grow. So I think the big factor here is that, is the game growing at a rate that is, you know, allowing players to be encountering new rules and abilities so that it makes the game interesting and keeps you focused on playing? Because honestly, we probably wouldn't play X-Wing for very long if all we had was just that first wave of releases for second edition, just the extended kits. Sure, you'll get some time out of it, but eventually we want to start seeing new content, right?
It'd get boring real fast, yeah.
So I think, you know, an increase in complexity, if you have the right balance, you will naturally see a game get more complex in order to keep the game alive over time.
Conversely, though, what that does is the more complex a game gets, and I think we might see this a little bit with the new factions that are coming out, is it will get less accessible for new players to get into the game.
Yeah, so I think this is another big question here, because we're going to talk specifically about some of the cards we're seeing in the new releases, a lot of Separatist cards we're seeing, but the effect of increasing complexity on X-Wing, that's the first huge one, is I think to a degree, X-Wing 2nd Edition is a little bit hard for new players to get into, especially on the competitive level. Obviously, anyone can buy the core set and buy whatever ships they want, enjoy the game as is. But I think a really great part of X-Wing is that competitive level. They've got a really well-structured set of different level events, you know, store level events. We're coming up on some hyperspace trials here in Minnesota. So it's a fun time, and those events are actually where I get a lot of the fun of playing X-Wing. But the more complex you make a game, the harder it is for someone who's brand new to the rule set to get into it. And I think we saw that over time in first edition, where you'd have, you know, once the game had been out for 4 years or so, and we'd seen 12, 13 waves, 14 waves of content, at a certain point, a new player's not going to be able to get into the game because there's just too many cards. Not only is it too expensive, there's just too many cards to track, too much information to know what's good and what's not good. And I think to that point, we probably started to see fewer and fewer new players getting into the game. Sure, there were a handful here and there, but part of the second edition relaunch, it was nice to see that to some degree, we could decrease the card pool, decrease the complexity of the game, might negatively impact it for more enfranchised players, but I think made it more accessible for new players.
And one of the things, too, with these new factions is you talk about enfranchised players, but if you've noticed, nothing that they're releasing for the Republic or the Separatists has a damage deck or dice or even like a full set of the rules. So It's clearly geared towards people that are already playing the game.
Sure. I mean, minimally, you'd have to pick up a core set, which seems a little counterintuitive because it's going to come with a bunch of ships that you're not going to be able to use in those two factions. I do like the ship packs. I think that's a good way to get people into the game more quickly. But if you're trying to get new players into the game, I feel like there's kind of mixed messages here because I think a lot of people were excited when they saw prequel era ships. There's a lot of cool ship content from that era of Star Wars. Like, you see all that, and then you're like, oh, this seems like a good time for me to jump in. I really love the Clone Trooper stuff. And then you just see the amount of card text on these cards. I think it makes it pretty tricky to have new players, like, jump in at this level. Because I feel like a lot of these cards are more angled at, like you're saying, the people who've already been playing X-Wing. Because this is kind of the, since second edition launch, this is the first time we've really seen like brand new content for second edition.
And for some of those people that have already been in the game for a while now, we've already got five existing separate factions that you can choose from. And now you're just adding two more. That can be a lot for people to take in.
Though I will say to that, I think since there was a lot of the game's complexity lost from the transfer from first edition into second edition, and I think part of that, you know, fewer complicated cards, card cost change around, a lot of what we saw there was a higher increase on the value of variance in the game. So the game is a lot more variance dependent. I'm not going to argue with that point. You know, you're depending a lot more on die rolls since there's fewer ways to get multiple points of modification. I think that was necessary and good to switch into a new edition that way. And naturally, like we said before, you're going to see an increase in complexity over time. So the game is going to get new content and the game's going to get more complex. And I think to a good degree, that's a good thing, that the game will evolve. I think where it becomes problematic is if we get too much all at once. And that's where I'm a little wary of these two new factions.
One of the nice things they're doing with competitive play is kind of the hyperspace format. Which does make the game less complex by limiting that card pool, even for experienced players, having a set number of options that for the most part came in the new core set or the initial releases of ships. Very basic abilities, easy to understand, just makes the game as a whole a lot easier to approach for that competitive format.
Yeah, and I think they did find a kind of a nice balance for the hyperspace format, because Extended is clearly not accessible for players, because most of these ships, some of them are not even in print anymore. They're in first edition, so you need the ships and a conversion kit. Hyperspace was a nice middle ground, because while it does contain a lot of ships that aren't currently reprinted, we know some reprints are forthcoming, like the Rebel Millennium Falcon's coming out. So I'm guessing a lot of the ships in the hyperspace format will see reprints here in the near future. I do like that the hyperspace format does limit the pool down. Now, that might make it a little simple sometimes, but it does make an easier entry point for players to decrease that complexity, so they only have to know a much more finite selection of upgrade cards, even if it's still spread across five different factions, soon to be seven.
And I like that we've seen a little bit at this point how they can kind of rotate ships in and out of the hyperspace format. Mm-hmm. And what I think that's going to lead to is kind of the disappearance of Extended as a competitive play format.
Yeah, I think to a large degree, I'm curious to see how this plays out over time. I always felt like that was kind of the direction. I wasn't sure when they had first announced kind of a first edition format, if that would be the pure way, because it would take a while to release a lot of ships. And the game does need, for competitive players, there's kind of a baseline of complexity that we're kind of towing right now between the game being complex enough or not. I do like the middle ground there of having the hyperspace format, where they can pull from the extended pool of ships, but it's still accessible for new players. All right, so the way we wanted to close out this episode was by looking at a lot of the, I think, more complex cards or wordier cards, things that I'm kind of worried about for the future of X-Wing. I don't want to seem too negative, because I know our podcast is known for being positive, maybe sometimes too positive about the game. So I'm actually still very excited, even for some of these cards we're going to talk about. Some of them I'm definitely not excited about. But I'm really excited for the two new factions, but I just, I think it's good to be aware of the way the game design is changing in X-Wing. So I think by kind of breaking down some of these cards, we can get into maybe where we'll see some problems.
One of the first things that stands out about some of these new upgrades that they've leaked in preview articles for the new factions is just the number of words per upgrade card. There is just an obscene amount of text for some of these upgrades across both of the new factions.
Yeah, I mean, like, we're talking about, card text space completely filled up, which is not something you necessarily see, especially in a lot of the conversion kit, like the first wave of upgrade cards. A lot of those are pretty, simple. You see cards like Predator, keep things in your bullseye, get to reroll a die. Now we're seeing, basically the entire card text space used up for card text. I think we've even seen some font size decreases here to fit some of the text on these cards. I think a good one to start with would be a card I actually really do hate right now. Not so much for what it does, just for how incredibly complicated it is.
So that would be the new configuration coming out for the Separatist faction for the Vulture-class droid fighter, Grappling Struts, which is a double-sided configuration card. And there is a whole novel of text on both sides of this card. So on one side it says, Grappling Struts closed. Setup. Equip this side face-up. While you execute a maneuver, if you overlap an asteroid or debris cloud and there are one or fewer other friendly ships at range zero of that obstacle, you may flip this card.
Oh, that's simple enough, right?
Yeah, I mean, you've got two or three conditions that you're kind of keeping track of here, but it's all one sentence, pretty easy to read through. It's just a lot to read through.
Absolutely.
And on the flip side, you have Grappling Struts open, and here's where we get into just a whole paragraph of text. You ignore obstacles at range zero and while you move through them, period. After you reveal your dial, if you reveal a maneuver other than a two straight and are at range zero of an asteroid or debris cloud, skip your execute maneuver step and remove one stress token. Semicolon. If you revealed a right or left maneuver, rotate your ship 90 degrees in that direction, period. After you execute a maneuver, flip this card.
So this card just makes me kind of sick to read, because I really don't like cards with a lot of text on them. This one is the mother of all text-loaded cards here. And it's like, what is that? There's many different independent clauses in there for different things that are happening. So, I mean, I get the idea of it. All right, like, once you understand, you've read through it maybe twice, you understand, like, okay, cool, the ships stop flying, they set down on an asteroid or debris cloud, and then they just kind of stand there like a sentry or a turret and rotate around. But the amount of required text to articulate that, makes me wonder if this was even worthwhile putting in the game. And this is coming from a perspective where I haven't seen it on the table yet, so like I can't really say if it's a really good strategy or not. But just on the level of complexity, I don't like that for X-Wing, because I feel like this is adding both too many rules, too many words, and for a ship that you're presumably going to have lots of, this is a lot of card text to familiarize yourself with.
Yeah, and you have the clauses after and if reappear in this card text several times. I think each time that happens, it just gets increasingly more complex to understand and interact with. Not only as the player using the card, but as the opponent of that player. If my opponent is showing me this list and all of a sudden I have to read all of this text just to have a basic understanding of what their list does, we're just wasting valuable playing time.
And I do think this is going to be one of those mechanics that if it does get used pretty frequently, which I'm sure it will be because I think these ships will be pretty viable, people will get used to it. But there's always that degree of like, oh, wait, when does it remove a stress? Okay, I skip executes. Okay, I can only go two straight. Okay, what if someone blows up my asteroid I'm on? Like all these questions you have to raise. I also think there's some people have brought up, there's some technical questions like the order of events here for closed versus opens. It almost seems to me like it doesn't actually stay flipped over, but that's a debate for another day, I guess. But I think that's a good benchmark for how complicated these cards can get. That's probably the most complicated one we've seen so far from the two new factions. But some of these other ones are still getting up there in the word count and the number of different triggers or conditions that must be met for them to activate.
Yeah, so some other good examples would be the new faction-specific pilot talent cards. So we've got one for the Separatists and one for the Republic. So the Republic one is non-limited and is called Dedicated. While another friendly ship in your side arc, pointing out to the left or right, at range 0 to 2 defense, if it is limited or has the Dedicated upgrade and you are not strained, you may gain one strain token. If you do, the defender re-rolls one of their blank results. Not too difficult to understand, but for me it's on that borderline amount of too much text, getting a little unwieldy, and there's just a lot of things to keep track of there.
Yeah, and actually I like the mechanics that the Republic are bringing. I love the like side arc abilities, support abilities. But again, this is just so many words to articulate a pretty simple idea, right? It's just, but you're introducing new things. Obviously, we have new rules in the form of strain tokens. And again, this is a pretty high word count compared to a lot of stuff we've seen. I'm hoping someone can correct me, though. I'd love to, if someone's gone through all the card text and like figured out the exact average word counts per faction and whatnot, prove me wrong on this. But just like a cursory glance at this stuff looks like, especially the Separatists have a lot of words on their end. The other talent dedicated to the Separatists, Treacherous, comes with one charge. While you defend, you may choose a ship obstructing the attack and spend one charge. If you do, cancel one hit or crit result, and the ship that you chose gains one strain token. Second clause, after a ship at range 0 to 3 is destroyed, recover one charge. So again, not a crazy difficult card to understand. The value of it, this is one of those cards where like if you're a new player, you might not fully understand the value of this card, but it's just a lot of words on there to articulate an idea. And while I think it's good to have, again, like a slight increase in complexity over time to make the game interesting, this is not the most accessible card, especially if you're hoping people join into the game with this faction.
And then bouncing back to the Republic side of things, we have a new modification card that's for the Republic and requires you to have the target lock action on your action bar. It's called Synchronized Console, and it reads, after you perform an attack, you may choose a friendly ship at range 1 or a friendly ship with the Synchronized Console upgrade at range 1 to 3 and spend a lock you have on the defender. If you do, the friendly ship you chose may acquire a lock on the defender.
Again, this is a card with a lot of card text. I also think it does have some accessibility issues because there's something about cards. This is a card that could be part of a good strategy where you're just trying to, you know, fire off ordnance, use your target, have the target locks in order to shoot the ordnance, but pass them to someone else so either they can spend the target lock to reroll or just be able to fire an ordnance with them. It's a cool idea. It's not immediately apparent why this card would be good potentially, and the fact that they have to slip in multiple conditions to meet either, you know, the divide between a friendly ship at range one or a friendly ship with the synchronized console upgrade at range one to three just adds a lot of bulk to the card. And I don't like that so much in X-Wing. I like when, you know, I was not a big fan when, like, condition cards came out into X-Wing in first edition. Not so much that I was opposed to the idea. It was the fact that so many of those condition cards had just a wall of text. You know, we saw first edition Harpoon Missile with its confusing wording and confusing timing windows create all kinds of problems for the game. And I would have liked, you know, condition cards had they come in as maybe a standard set of effects, you know, like kind of like what Rattled does over for the Resistance Bomber, like having like a more standardized effect, like, it, oh, at this trigger, it does this thing. So they'd be consistent across all ships. The fact that every ship that would deal or every upgrade that would deal a condition card had a wall of text on it and was different, I was not a big fan of that.
Yeah, as much as I like the complexity of the game, I like my card abilities to be simple, and I can just read through them in 5 seconds and understand them. The redeeming factor for me about Synchronized Console is that there's just one after then if clause. So you have two very distinct parts of this card after you blah, 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 and then you have the bulk of that,
right,
all that text. And then the if part, pretty short. If you do, friendly ship can acquire a lock. Pretty easy. It's just still a lot to look at face value.
All right, so the last set of cards we're going to look at here, these ones are actually introducing a really new mechanic to the game, which is actually really intriguing to me. I again get worried if this is too complex or if it kind of borders on the edge of gimmick for X-Wing. But we see two new cards that I guess you can only really describe them as remote cards. We have a device upgrade called DRK-1 Probe Droids for the Separatist faction, and we have a missile card called Discord Missiles, also for the Separatist faction. And linked to both of these cards, we have a new card type called, I think it's called a Remote. It looks kind of like a pilot card. It's got some stats on there and an initiative. But these also add a whole new wall of text and a whole new mechanic to the game.
Yeah, so if you're looking at the DRK-1 Probe Droid, when you're reading through the card at first glance, it just sounds like a very typical device card. So during the end phase, a little bit different, you may spend one charge to drop or launch one DRK-1 probe droid using a speed 3 template. The card's charge cannot be recovered. And then you have the what looks like a pilot card for the DRK-1 probe droid, which reads, while a friendly ship locks an object or jams an enemy ship, it may measure range from you. After an enemy ship overlaps you, that ship rolls one attack die. On a focus result, you suffer one damage. And then it does say at the bottom, systems phase, at your initiative, you may relocate using a 2-bank left, 2-straight, or 2-bank right template. One of the first things that sticks out to me there is the word relocate. It's not something I think we've seen so far in either edition of X-Wing.
Yeah, and so part of here, not necessarily just the number of words or the number of clauses here, this is immediately introducing new mechanics, which is cool. Obviously, I'm not opposed to introducing new mechanics to the game, but I think, man, this thing's got a lot going on for it. So it's kind of a bomb you drop. You don't drop it at a normal time. So that's different for people. That's new information to consume. It has a cool ability that, you know, when you lock ships or jam things, so do two different conditions, you can measure range from this thing instead, whatever this you call this, a ship, a remote device, what have you. Then it has a clause for how it might get blown up if it gets run into. Then it has a whole new way to move, so relocate, whatever that means. Some type of maneuvering uses maneuver templates. And then it also has got a stat line like a normal ship. So this card is interesting to me. I like the idea. It seems very thematic, very Darth Maul, Phantom Menace-y. But at the same time, I sit here and I wonder, okay, this is kind of a weird thing that we're going to have to get used to. It's definitely interjecting itself into the game because we haven't even seen anything, you know, close to what this card is in X-Wing, either in first edition or in second edition. And I wonder if it borders on the line of gimmick over new mechanic, where it's more for kind of the thematic flavor that it exists, not that it's really going to enhance the experience of the game.
And for me, part of what, you know, the difference between mechanic or gimmick is going to boil down to how does this card actually interact with the game? Is a remote something different than a device? Is it an object? Is it an obstacle? It's got a stat line similar to that of a ship. So how exactly is this card going to fit into the current game of X-Wing?
And we see actually in a similar way over with the Discord missiles and the Buzz Droid Swarm. We see kind of an emphasis on being thematic and kind of following with what we've seen in the core Star Wars movies. Not necessarily good for the game. I don't want to, you know, prejudge these things too hard. Obviously, I've not played any games with them on the table. But these add a lot of card plex and a lot of complexity. And they're adding a whole new dimension to the game that so far looks like it's only available for one faction. Discord Missiles is a limited to 3 copies missile card with 1 charge. At the start of the engagement phase, you may spend 1 calculate token and 1 charge token to launch 1 Buzz Droid Swarm using the 3 bank left, 3 straight, or 3 bank right templates. And this card's charges cannot be recovered. So this happens at the start of engagement. It doesn't deny you a ship, but it does have 2 costs. Both you have to spend the charge and you have to use a calculate token.
Yeah, and after you do all of that, you get to eject a token. And again, we have another card similar to that of a pilot card. It is the Buzz Droid Swarm, has an initiative of 0. After an enemy ship moves through or overlaps you, relocate, there's that word again, to its front or rear guides. And then in parentheses, it says you are at range 0 of the ship. You cannot overlap an object this way. If you cannot be placed at either set of guides, you and that ship each suffer 1 damage. And at the bottom, it says engagement phase. At your initiative, each enemy ship at range 0 suffers 1 critical damage.
So what I do like about this card is it's very thematic, and it does channel that start of Revenge of the Sith, you know, the whole Jedi Starfighter battle, which is a super cool sequence, especially if you're a fan of the starship battles from Star Wars, you know, that's iconic. The question is, though, does this really benefit the game in a meaningful way? Does this feel kind of silly? Does it seem almost unfair? Obviously, we're going off of not knowing any point values right now. But, John, do you feel like this is the kind of thing you'd like to see in X-Wing? Either the Buzz Droid Swarm or the Probe Droid?
I'd love to see them on maybe like a themed night at a store, like just for fun. I don't necessarily know that I'd want to interact with it at a competitive level, just because to me it does feel gimmicky. Also aside, I'm also just not very interested in the Separatist faction.
Sure.
So, but... I do think there's some interesting interactions here. Like if you're looking at Discord missiles, it's a munition, but it just says at the start of the engagement phase. It doesn't indicate that it's at the player using its initiative. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just all these different added, you know, implementations to the game that I think make it more gimmicky than a competitive mechanic.
You know, obviously, this is all up for debate, too. I'd love for any of our listeners, if you guys are really excited for these cards or if you think they're not that complex, I'd love to hear your guys' feedback. You can hit our Facebook page or tweet at us. Let us know, are you excited, especially for these remote cards? Are you excited for Probe Droids? Are you excited for Buzz Droid Swarm? Let us know on the social media there, because, you know, when these actually finally release, maybe I'll be, you know, taking back all these negative things I've said about them. But for the time being, I'm still pretty wary of these new cards. Though I don't think it's going to diminish my excitement for seeing prequel-era stuff in X-Wing. That's still pretty cool. All right, so that's our look at some of the increasing complexity we're seeing in X-Wing. It's interesting. We're just looking at Wave 3, basically, but we've got presumably more waves to come in the near future. We're going to see if this is a trend that continues, if it's isolated to just these 2 new factions, or if we're going to start seeing more and more cards, more and more remote cards introduced into the game. Either way, though, John, thank you so much for coming on the show today, covering for Carson, and chatting X-Wing with me.
Yeah, always a pleasure, Tim.
And thank you guys for listening to the show. If you really enjoy listening to the show, please go on to facebook.com/RadioTCX and like our Facebook page. You can also follow us on Twitter at RadioTCXPodcast. Throw us a message if you're excited about these new cards. If you enjoy listening to the show, you can also go on to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review along with a comment saying what you like about the podcast and why others would be interested in listening. And of course, you can always support us directly by going to patreon.com/radioTCX and becoming a supporter of the podcast today. We really do appreciate all our Patreon backers. Again, guys, thank you so much for listening to the podcast, and we will talk to you next week.